Hello, I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy, and you're listening to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast,
where we help you become a family who lives, loves, and leads well. Hello, and welcome back to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast. We are excited that you have joined with us today. We are diving right in and talking about the five everyday ways to build intimacy with your spouse. And this is something Christy and I have emphasized every day for a reason.
We have. We've tried.
Well, it takes every day, right? Like, it takes every day to build it. It's not like this some grand vacation to, like, all of a sudden we just need a vacation and we're going to become more intimate. It's an everyday process.
I would love the grand vacation, I will say that, but I agree.
Yeah.
We have learned that if we're not doing this daily, if we let it slip for a little while, that it affects us for sure. So, yeah. So let's dive in.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. And let's talk about it by using an example that just happened last week.
Yeah. This example is one that I hope most people can relate to, because it's literally like an everyday. I mean, this is just the way life is. But
yeah. But let me just preface this, because we're doer parents. And so there's a degree to which our brains have to be calm. And if you're a doer parent, you might relate to this, but our brains have to be calm at the end of an evening before we can actually just rest. Mm. And in order for our brains to be calm, things have to be done around the house, right? Like, we have to know that the kitchen's cleaned up. We have to know that, you know, everything is organized and we're ready for the next day. And type A, maybe, other than doer
That's
parent.
That's very type
but
yes.
But this night in particular, we decided not to clean up the kitchen after dinner.
Yes.
The kitchen was a mess, because it's usually a mess after dinner. And with,
like,
the kids,
I don't actually understand how it happens, but it looks like a tornado like went through there.
Yeah.
Every day.
It's funny, because I'm the person who, if I'm making, again, I'm making peanut butter and jam, and I'm not like doing something grand like Christy does in terms of cooking in the kitchen. But it's funny, because I literally will put the peanut butter on and I put the peanut butter away, and then I put the jam on and I put the jam away.
But I think that's why you do peanut butter and jam, because you can keep it clean. That's just who you are.
But I don't even leave it all out.
No, I
like,
know.
I put
I
it
know.
Away as I'm using it.
You're
Christy
so
just
weird.
Gets it all out and just lets it all out, and it just is there. And that's why it looks like a tornado.
Yeah.
But the food tastes great. So,
thanks.
So as we decided to leave everything a mess, and the reason we did that was because we're trying to intentionally just be with our kids.
Yeah.
And had we cleaned up that night, it would have been, they would have needed to go to bed right away. And we wanted to make sure that we were present. We wanted to make sure that we put our phones away, and we weren't focusing on the doing, but we were focusing on the being with our kids that night. And so we just said, okay, let's leave it.
People,
so we
left over it. Projects.
That's right.
Right.
So we left it. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we did. We left it. And I was honestly really proud of myself, I have to say, because that is so not in my nature. And so, but we did, and it was great. And we really did have a fun time with the kids, put them to bed. The next morning we woke up, of course, and you know, it's like any type of procrastination. It's still waiting for you, right? So the kitchen was a disaster. And so Josh starts, I don't even know how you started it, but it was just this barrage of, oh my goodness, this table is disgusting. It is sticky. And oh my goodness, how does all this food get on the floor? This is so gross. And oh, the dishes stink. And it just kept going and going and going and
going. It might have been a little running commentary.
It was a running commentary. It's exactly what it was. And it was,
but
like,
it was crazy to me that it was that messy. That's really what it was.
Right. And I lost my cool.
Well, it was when I went over to the table. I'm over at the table and I'm cleaning up the because we literally left the sticky food that our kids were eating on the table that night. We didn't even clean the table off.
No, right. And out. And then I finally was just like, I had it. And I was like, stop. Like, I get it. I can see how messy it is. And like, you don't think I know this? Like, stop. And I realized, I think you were kind of taken aback, because I don't know why I reacted that strongly until later when I had time to reflect on it. And I realized, I think what you had done is you'd triggered my lie. Which the lie that I hear in my head is, you're not good enough. You're not a good enough wife. You're not a good enough mother. Even though that was something we had chosen to do together. That wasn't just my responsibility or something I'd neglected. We'd chosen to do that. But you continually bringing it up, up and up and up and up and up just made me feel like it just triggered that lie.
And for me, I wasn't even thinking. I mean, you had made dinner the night before. I'm usually the one who cleans up. It's usually my job to clean up anyway. It's not your job. I mean, typically. I mean, usually I'm the one cleaning
up. I make
up
the food. You clean
That's
it up.
That's right.
Yeah.
So for me, it wasn't even thinking about you and you being a failure as a mom, because that's the last thing that I believe, or as a wife, but you received it that way.
And truly, I knew you weren't, I think I knew you weren't even directing those comments at me. And I think I knew, truthfully, you pull your weight around the house. It's not like you deserved my defensiveness in that moment, but those truths didn't matter when they had triggered my lie.
And you speaking to me that way, mm-hmm, made me not like you in that moment at all.
And you triggering my lie made me so angry with you that because I made me feel like a failure. I didn't like you.
So we fell out of like with each other that morning.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, happens
a lot.
I wouldn't say it frequently, but it happens.
I think it does in those daily moments, right?
Yeah, in those daily moments, for sure. And not even just with this, but even like, let me put the onus on me a second. I mean, when I'm coming home and I'm stressed about my day, or I need to process with you, and your mind isn't even there, and I'm talking about things that have gone on, and you're starting to feel the stress, and you're starting to you take that on personally, and this is something we've talked about as well, then all of a sudden you get in a bad mood and you don't like me, and then it can escalate very easily if we're not communicating about that communication.
Right.
And about our feelings and about how we're coming. Because a lot of it is about how we come across to each other. It's not about what we're saying. Because I think we're pretty transparent. It's how we communicate.
Oh, exactly. And I think we have to realize, sinful human sitting over here talking with another sinful human sitting right over there. I mean, we're going to come against, like, our sharp edges are going to hit. And they're going to cause little sparks, right? And I think what we're learning, though, is that despite those episodes of dislike, which are going to come up, mm-hmm, frequently, mm-hmm, actually, intimacy is sort of, I think, the flip side of that. And that's something we can still strive toward every day, but it's something we have to work toward, right? Because everything in our sinful, fallen human nature is just warring against us.
And that's why we talk about this is every day. Because every day we fall out of like with each other at some capacity. I mean, I'm not saying it's every day, but it's in those mundane moments where you just don't like each other. But
yes,
I think this is what's really important here, is that the one lesson we continue to learn is that like is a feeling, but love is a choice.
Yeah.
And because the marital relationship is not... There's two covenant relationships in scripture on earth here, and you have the marriage, and then you also have your relationship with your kids. And let's be honest here, we pour into our kids all of the time, and especially in those early years, we don't get anything back. It's not, it's like, it's easy to quote unquote, well, you hear the phrase, well, I love him, but I'm not in love with him.
Right.
And it's like, okay, what if we said that about our kids? You know, what if we said, you know, but it's that love, it's choosing.
Can we say that about our kids?
Yeah, it's that choosing every day.
Yeah.
But what you find, though, is when you choose to love your kids over and over and over again, mm-hmm, in their spilled milk, bad attitudes, disrespectful behavior, as teenagers, whatever that looks like, the more we press into them and choose to love them, mm-hmm, the more joy we end up finding with our kids. Like, the love grows. Mm. The same dynamic happens when you choose to love your spouse day in and day out, even though you fall in and out of like. So what can that look like? What are ways that we can grow in intimacy each and every day?
Right. And that's something we've kind of wrestled with, because we're pretty practical, I think, people, and we need something to kind of hang our hats on. Like, okay, what does this actually look like? Because you can talk theoretical. Like,
right,
you know, like, let's grow in our intimacy. I don't really, just tell me what that looks like. Like, tell me what to do today, right? So the first one, this is really yours, because this is your definition. This is so depressing, I think, honestly.
But it's so rich.
It's real, though.
Yeah.
It's really real. So tell them your definition of intimacy, or the one you like the best.
Yeah. It's by a psychologist named David Burns, and his definition of intimacy is that intimacy is the willingness to endure the negative feelings you get when you get close to another person. Mm-hmm. Let me state it again. It's your willingness to endure the negative feelings you get when you get close to another person. Now, you think about all the negative feelings we have when we get close to another person, right?
Everything we've talked about already.
Everything we've talked about already. But we didn't even talk about parenting strategies, how you and I are different in how we parent, and how that creates negative feelings between us. Or how in-laws, we haven't talked about in-laws, how that creates negative feelings between people.
Or just habits, or defensiveness,
even you with chronic back issues, and how that just puts you in such a horrible mood that you treat us differently. That's the reality. And we talk about that often.
Yeah.
And again, these are things that we talk about often. I have mine with my fears, right? And how my stress and that plays a role. And so, but
it's true. It's that intimacy. Like, if I'm going to remain close with you, I'm going to have to endure all that stuff about you, all that negative stuff about you that, you know, the stress from work, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you know what that is, like the heavy stuff that your spouse just being in relationship puts on your shoulders. There's just negative stuff. There is with any human you interact with, but it's the willingness to endure that, right?
Yeah. And let's go back to that morning. Let's go back to, for me, when you accused me of saying that you're a failure as a parent, and you didn't actually accuse me of that. You just said, stop, I get it.
Right.
And that was like that was your charge at me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say anything because I knew better. I didn't say anything because I knew better. But pressing, but let's be honest, there's an underlying motivation. And I knew there was an underlying motive. I knew there was something else going on within that.
Right.
Just like with your back pain.
Yeah.
You know, I know that there's something going on. I didn't for a long time. I mean, for a long time, you would just get irritable and I would think that it was about me and not about you. And so therefore I would get defensive and it would create this, but these are everyday things, right? So until I started to get underneath and you and I started talking about how your back issues make you feel, that was powerful for us in our relationship. Because what it did for me is it helped me have more empathy for you and the pain that you are going through.
Because
there's a lot of listeners, I think, that if you deal with illness or chronic back pain, you can grow numb to that in your spouse.
Because
you hear
anything.
It all the time,
yeah.
Right? Or even for you, with me. So if I have a stress at work or something, or I'm stressed about a talk I'm giving or a paper or something I'm writing or whatever that looks like, you know, there's, you know, that stress over time, you just get tired of hearing it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but pressing into that, what is the underlying motivation behind that? How can we hear what that accusation is and what's really going on? Because for Christy, underneath was, I feel like a failure as a mom.
Right. Right. But, and I think it's when you can like lean into that and empathize with it a little bit. I mean, we're never going to be able to fully empathize with someone else's position, right? We cannot honestly walk in their shoes, but to lean in and empathize with it a little bit and try to understand that feeling, that's when the intimacy grows.
Absolutely. Yeah. So okay. Number two.
Okay. Tuck each other into bed. You love this one too.
I love this one because I like to cuddle.
You do. Yeah. I don't not. I don't really.
You don't like to cuddle.
I know.
Let's just be honest.
But I think it's more than just cuddling.
It is
really
more than
what
just
it
cuddling.
Is. We've just realized we would fall into bed after all the things of the day and we get on our phones because it's the only moment that we would have to sort of just numb out, really. And we found ourselves connecting with our phones and not with one another. And so we never had that time really to debrief, to talk, to just be together.
And I think that's true for us. We do go to bed together. Mm-hmm. Most nights we go to bed together. But it would be easy to lay on the phone, or it would be easy to watch TV, or it would be easy to not be together in those moments. Whereas some of our richest times together are when we're literally tucking each other, when we crawl into bed together and we have pillow talk.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Never actually tucked me into bed. I can tell you that.
Yeah, it's not a physical tucking into bed, but let's be honest here. All right, unless you want me to, you know, if that's something underneath your.
No, I don't like when the sheets it's too restrictive. No, I don't.
So
no tucking.
So, you know, that idea, we have people that we work with and meet with who they don't want to go to bed together. Mm-mm. And the reason they don't want to go to bed together is it's oftentimes, and this is what we'll hear in some cases. Actually, we hear this in a lot of cases. I'm afraid if we go to bed together, it's going to mean we have to have sex. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And so we're going to jump to the next one, which is talking about sex and talking openly about sex. And I know this is one that can be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, right? I think it's such a personal, like it's so deeply personal, especially for women. I think men, I feel like, are able to compartmentalize or something, that with women, it's so deeply personal and it holds such great power, you know, to bring together, but also to divide. And I think,
go ahead.
Well, I just think there's this, it's something, it's the elephant in the room, right? It's something we have to actually talk about, like have the conversation about, because it's so easy to go into these habitual, like we just get into these routines and we ignore the elephant in the room and we're not talking about the dynamic, whatever it is for you as a couple. There's the wanting and there's the avoiding, and there's usually a combination in a relationship, right?
And sometimes it goes back and forth. It doesn't always mean that, because you can generally say, oh, well, the man is the wanting and the woman is the avoiding, but that can go both ways, because you know, that can go on for a while and then all of a sudden she's the wanting and he's like, ah, I'm too tired, I'm working, I'm stressed, whatever, and he's avoiding, and then it creates this perpetual cycle.
Exactly. And I think it's what we have found, it's the conversation. It's like we actually have to bring up the elephant in the room and giving each other insight into the whys behind our behavior. So it gives us that new understanding, right? To view this like the rhythm of our relationship. And I think that gives us sort of, if I understand the why, like you're not so offended by a rollover, right? Or I'm too tired, or
And the why for me, I mean, let's go to the, be honest, like the why for me is, and you talk about it being deeply personal. It is deeply personal, even for men too. But I think a lot of times we don't know how to verbalize that. We don't know how to talk about that. Hmm. You know, the why for me is, you know, I mean, the Bible speaks very clearly to not let the, you know, marriage bed go empty for too long, right? I mean, it's don't leave it rest except by prayer and fasting. And I think there's a reason for that. You know, the why for me is, you know, and you hear this often, the phrase that women need to feel loved in order to have sex, but men need to have sex in order to feel loved. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that holds true across the board, but I know for me it does.
Yeah.
Like I need that.
We've had a lot of conversations about that, because that it's just that translation, at least for us, male to female brains. Like, I truly am like, I can't grasp that. Really? Is that really the truth for you? So we've had really good conversations, I think, about that. You've helped me understand. And again, it's the why. It's the why behind you.
Yeah.
Right.
And as we talk about the intimacy factor, I mean, we've covered negative emotion. We covered the emotional intimacy piece here. Now that we talk about the physical intimacy piece, this isn't, and again, it's not that you're talking about sex every day or that you have to have sex every day, but it's talking openly. It's having this ongoing conversation and having it be at the forefront of your mind in your relationship, you know. And by the way, what we are not talking about in any way, shape, or form, I mean, great sex is a mutual willingness. It's a mutual submission to one another on the part of both spouses to give pleasure, not to receive it, right? Not to merely receive it.
Right.
I mean, the whole idea of the act of marriage is about giving of yourself. And so nobody should ever feel coerced into feeling like they should have sex. So I just want to make sure we are very open about that. This is about because there are some relationships where this is the case. And what we're talking about here is a mutual submission to one another, where there's an openness, there's an understanding, and you know, and there's that why. There's, you're calling out the why. Why does it matter? And how is it important to you? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it can just feel like, oh, you're throwing yourself on me, and you know, and I'm too tired, or, you know, and I mean, even for us, a lot of our conversation revolves around the when. It's not just the why, it's the when. By the time you put the kids down, if you wait every single day to, you know, get physically intimate and have sex at night after the kids are down, you're going to find that it's just going to, you're too tired. You're going to find that, you know, and so.
And then the, so it's the avoiding.
It's that avoiding
and then
again.
The longer it goes, then it becomes the bigger elephant in the room and it causes this tension between you. And I think what you just said there is really interesting though, because when you were talking about, it's a serving of one another, right? And I think to speak up for women particularly, and I don't, this, I'm not saying this goes for all women, but for myself anyway, and for a lot of my friends, we've just found we are serving, or we feel like we're serving all day long. So if you're coming to us at the end of the day, and that is the last, like it's another, if it's another service thing for us, it's no wonder that the enemy loves to twist that, right? And to make it feel like another chore after we've been serving, you know, in air quotes, our families all day long. And this is just another obligation on our plates. And I think that's what has helped us the most is calling that to the table. Like we, I needed to verbalize that for you, right? So you understood how that translated in my brain. It felt like another obligation.
Right. And so as we talk about the physical intimacy part, I think I want to go to the next one. We're talking about five ways every single day. And it ties in, they all tie into each other. This ties back into the sex, the physical intimacy part, but the other one is being mindful of disconnection and acting on it when you feel disconnected with each other. And so I'm going to tie this all into the last couple about even going to bed together, because a lot of times we can feel disconnected from our spouse at night when it's time to go to bed. But now all of a sudden you don't want to go to bed because you don't want to have sex. And so it becomes about the sex too. But you're still feeling that perpetual disconnection. And that's why if we can have these conversations and there's expectation about, you know, the sex and when it happens, and that there's, that you can take, you know, sex off the table for going to bed, but you can have meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes that sex happens spontaneously because of the conversation.
Because it doesn't feel like an obligation.
It's not an obligation.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And so you're having this, but you're also being creative about when you're having sex at other times too, if it's possible, you know, in terms of your schedule and what the kids are doing and where they're at and all that kind of thing. And so that's really critical, because especially it's that feeling of disconnection.
Right. And I think
press in on it.
Exactly. Because I think so often we just ignore those feelings and we just let it fester. And so this cycle continues, right? And this dance continues where we just keep avoiding each other on purpose.
Yeah.
Right? Because we don't know what to do with that disconnection that we feel. And so like sometimes really all it takes is like one simple little gesture. Mm. But it's just the leaning into that, right? Someone has to do the first lean.
Yeah.
And it could be, you know, just, I mean, sending a text or planning a date or buying a little treat that you know your like spouse loves. Writing a note or leaving around the house. I don't know. Something that doesn't take
speaking
a lot.
Speaking into their love language.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. And just doing something that says, hey, and it could just be a text that says, hey, I just don't feel connected right now. Would love to see you tonight.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I'd love to see you.
We'll be with you.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
I mean,
because I think we often see one another, but we miss each other.
Well, and it's like last night. I mean, we're going to community group last night, and it's the one, I mean, we dropped the kids off at the babysitter. We're going there, and I just want to be present with you. And you had you're serving the kids all day, or, you know, you're doing things. And all of a sudden, now this influx of text messages come in, and you feel like now's the perfect time to be able to get back to some people. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, now, wait a second, what about me? Mm-hmm. And so I think even there, I was feeling disconnect.
Right.
But to be able to call that out, now with our ENUP, it's easier for me to be able to call that out and you not get defensive about it. And and you didn't. But it's those conversations.
Yeah.
And it's not to say there's not times we don't get defensive, because we do. But it's calling out those times of disconnection. And then the last one is the spiritual intimacy. And I think this is so critical. Mm-hmm. And that is sharing with your spouse what God is teaching you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is something I've not done very well, honestly. I feel, I realized I was, my default was to just pour out my heart and all my tears to one of my close friends. And because that's what I've done my whole life, right? Like your girlfriends, and I would assume it's the same for guys. Your guy friends, like there's just that intimacy, like that camaraderie you've got, right? You just can be a mess, and I hope you have friends that you can be a mess with anyway. And my friends, I realized my friends were seeing the raw me, and then I would come home and I would give you like the Cliff Note version. Like, I had a great time with so-and-so, and oh my gosh, we talked about such, and I just, it was great. And I really, you know, dug into whatever, whatever it was. And then you're like, oh, you get the summary, right? You just get the brief. I've already dealt with all my hard stuff with her, and now I'm just giving you the like Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And,
and I didn't know you were doing that. Like, I didn't know that.
Well, and it's like I wanted to open up, but it feels so deeply private, and it was learning, I think, to put like one tiptoe in at a time and to begin sharing with you what God was teaching me in my quiet times. Cause even those just felt so personal to me, and I didn't know how to open that up to you.
Well, and I think too, on the flip side of that is for me, and again, I've just started realizing some of this stuff. If you're not familiar with the Enneagram, we've been going through the Enneagram and that kind of thing.
We love the Enneagram.
And I'm a type 6, and so fear is a big part of who I am, and so trusting God is something I'm really working on. But for me to share my fears with Christy was something that I never really did, because I didn't feel, it's not that I didn't feel safe enough, it's just that I didn't know how it was going to be received and even verbalize it. It was just one of those weird things that you just don't.
Well, sometimes you really don't know how to put language to it. Yeah. You don't know how to put words to it, right?
And so for Christy, then for her, and I think we're still learning this, for her to, and it's so funny because this can go both ways. It's usually a man who tries to fix the woman, right, when she's pouring out her heart.
Yeah.
In our cases right now, in some respects, it's me just kind of being able to debrief with Christy and vent and without her, but her, having her listen to me.
Because I want to fix it.
Because she wants to fix it. And I'm just like, I don't need your help. I just need you to listen and help me rationalize some of this, because some of it can get irrational and in my own brain. And I just need you to help me rationalize it.
Right.
And a lot of times that's just by listening.
But rationalize without demeaning.
Yes.
Right. Making it feel like, why on earth, you're like, you're crazy.
Yeah, you're crazy for thinking.
Legit crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something I think, I mean, that's something to us, but that's, I mean, there's just a little insight into our personal journeys and I think what the Lord's teaching us, but how we're learning to communicate it to one another.
And I think as we close, one of the key takeaways we want you to do is one of the prayers that Christy and I pray in our marriage is in Exodus. And it's when Moses is on the mountain meeting with God, and he says, God, he says, teach me your ways, make me aware of your presence, and show me your glory.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something we pray in our marriage, for our marriage. God, teach us your ways as a couple, as one flesh. Make us aware of your presence, because we don't want to do anything or go anywhere where you're not, that you're not a part of. And then all of this for your glory, not for ours, not for anything, but for your glory. And find a verse that can be deeply personal to you and your spouse, and start praying that together.
Mm-hmm.
It takes 28 days to a habit. Decide to pray it for a month, and pray that prayer, and make it be your verse in your marriage. And I believe wholeheartedly you'll start to see intimacy, spiritual intimacy, grow as you're connecting emotional and physical intimacy together. They're all interconnected.
Exactly. And I think for us, like that prayer thing, and choosing something for us that's unique to us and the journey God got us on has been so helpful, because it puts us on the same team, right?
Absolutely.
Like, we're in this together and we're walking this together. And I think for those of like those that are listening and those of us that have maybe grown up in church and who've walked with God for a number of years, it's a struggle to learn how to integrate someone else into a relationship that just involved you and the Lord. You know what I mean? It's to learn that dynamic of bringing someone else into that so personal and private time that you've walked with God. This has been one way that we've just is really helped us and opened doors.
So if you listen today and this resonates with you, remember, it's in the everyday, choosing to love, opening yourself up, having those conversations, choosing love over like, because like is fleeting, it's a feeling, but love remains, and the feeling grows when we choose to love.
I do still like you, by the way.
And I like you too.
information and resources, or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Josh and Christy.
And be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast. Write a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, and questions you may also want us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor walking alongside you.
We'll see you next week.